Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Vinyl Revelations podcast with your host, Sharpie. Now, I know it's been a while, and there's been various reasons for that, but I have had my interest in podcasting revitalized. I had to put my turntable away to the shop to get a new cartridge and it sorted out, and I got back. And I started going through my LP collection again, and that triggered some thought processes on some of the music that I listened to. I thought that might be worth speaking about again. And I've also been to a couple of really cracking gigs, and I thought, well, there's some comments I could make on those as well. So a combination of things has rejuvenated my interest in podcasting again, and here I am. So thanks very much for joining me, and I do have a few ideas for future podcasts, and they kind of essentially revolve around me rediscovering my LP collection again, because I've got some cracking things in there which should be worth speaking about. So yeah, I'm going to start going through those again and see where we go from there. But this has not got anything really to do with that, because I stumbled upon like a Loudwire 10 classic albums that you must own, and I was aware of most of them, but one or two stuck out as albums that I was vaguely aware of, but hadn't really bothered or had time to explore. And this album that I'm going to talk about just now on this episode is one of those. It's an album that I was aware of, a band that I was very much aware of and kind of knew on a kind of superficial level. But on getting hold of this album and listening to it and kind of really picking it apart, it really got my thought processes about this band, their influences, how they influence music, and and really what I guess this album means in the wider context of rock music. Yeah, so I've often said that my musical interest is quite often varied and sometimes verging on eclectic. And I've mentioned in previous podcasts that I love that linear influence through music, and so I listen to a lot of blues, a lot of jazz, and bits and pieces of folk. And this band that I'm going to speak about fuses often quite impressively all those genres, and even other genres like soul and the beginnings of funk. So who is it I'm going to speak about this week? Well, it is a band called The Band. And I first heard of this group through Bob Dylan's 1974 live album, Before the Flood, which is a mix of Bob Dylan's material and The Band's own songs, like Stage Fright and The Wait. And it's a live album that is, first of all, excellent. And although it was Dylan's name that attracted me to the album, it's actually the band's material that I'm kind of more fond of. And the band, through this, are a sound that I kind of began becoming increasingly intrigued with, as they're a sound that almost kind of sounds like they come straight out of like a Western saloon, and they sound just, they've got such a vibrant sound about them. So, where to start with this band called The Band? Where do you go to discover the essence of who they are and what they are about? Well, unfortunately, it's their last release, and it's a soundtrack, a live album soundtrack to their farewell concert. And it's The Band's Last Waltz is the name of the album. It was released on April the 7th, 1978. So I'm going to go over just a few details about the album itself. And I think it's an album that, maybe not too many people are kind of aware of. So I'm going to go into a few kind of details about it. So it was released on April the 7th, 1978, but it was actually recorded 2 years previously at the Winterland Arena in San Francisco in 1976 on Thanksgiving Day to 5,000 invited guests. It was released on the Warner Brothers label and is a stonking, the original release was 129 minutes long and is a triple album release. So why should we care about this group called The Band? Well, I think sometimes who they influenced often guides us as to how important a band is. But seeing as this is a live album and a celebration of the band's career, I think it's probably quite important to look at who also featured playing as guests alongside the band through this concert. So I'm going to reel off a few names here, okay? So we've got playing on this concert and in some of these tracks, we've got Eric Clapton, we've got Neil Diamond, we've got Bob Dylan, Emmylou Harris, the Staple Sisters, Van Morrison, Ronnie Wood, Neil Young, and Muddy Waters. And if you look at the diversity of sounds of these guests, that I think that kind of helps inform us of what a unique sound that the band have. So we can go on from that and look at who this band influenced. And some of the names include George Harrison, Elton John, The Grateful Dead, Wilco Johnson, obviously Eric Clapton, The Who, and Roger Waters. So again, just how important were the band? Well, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seemed appropriate to induct them into the Hall of Fame in 1994. The Rolling Stone ranked them as 50th on the list of the 100 greatest artists of all time. And the song The Wait also hits pretty high on Rolling Stone's 500 greatest of all time, greatest songs of all time, sitting at number 41. So, who were this band called The Band? So here's a few bits of like a rundown of how they formed and how their career progressed. So they were formed in 1967 with a mix of Canadian American musicians. Their band original band members included Rick Danko, Garth Hudson, Richard Manuel, Robbie Robertson, and Leon Helm. They began as the Hawks, a rockabilly backing group to Ronnie Hawkins. In 1963, they left Hawkins as I believe he was a bit of a hard taskmaster, and they grew as musicians, and they apparently outgrew the rockabilly sound and scene. In 1965, Bob Dylan hired them for a 65-66 US and world tour, where at this time they started using the name The Band. And this was actually the band that backed Bob Dylan in that infamous tour where Dylan was booed off the stage, and seen as a Philistine to the folkies, and slated him from going from acoustic to electric, and kind of perceived as betraying his folk roots. In 1968, they released their debut album, Music from the Big Pink, which is a tour de force that includes the Wait, and this album again features in Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums, sitting in at number 34. So why have I chosen this album to speak about? Well, I wonder if some groups, particularly that are so influential, are in a bit of danger of being forgotten. And even if you haven't heard of this band before, if you listen to rock music in any degree, if you listen to rock stations at all, you will have heard the song The Wait, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, and maybe even Stage Fright. And if you've been around anybody with a LP collection of classic rock albums, you'll probably recognize this album cover, with its simple but kind of elegant and dignified classic like font, and the outlines of the band in just a kind of black and brown cover. It's a very, very simple album cover. So I think this is a band that is undoubtedly viewed as important in the annals of rock history, but I don't think many people know or are aware of them, and I think that's a shame, especially as folkier music has had a bit of a resurgence over the past few years with, I guess, bands like, I don't know, Mumford and Sons and things like that. But although this is a farewell concert, this isn't a jaded sounding album. On the contrary, this is an epic sounding album. This album sounds massive with all the accompaniments, and the band themselves are all multi-instrumentalists. So they have quite a big sound anyway, but with all the additional musicians, particularly the horn section, this album sounds lively and massive. So I guess the album itself, is a proper, I guess, reflection of just how good these songs from the band actually are. And it's more like a well-crafted documentary. And the original release is a 3 LP set, and it's been subsequently released as a box set and a 40th anniversary expanded edition. And with live albums, they are often so vital because they are a cross-section of highlights of a tour or of a band's career. But I've actually listened to the expanded editions, and most unusually for a live album, the expanded editions are actually just as vital because it gives a full rounded picture of the band's career. And I have to say that, playing LPs quite frequently, that A double album, double LP is kind of fine for, actually like physically turning like four sides over. But a three LP set is a bit of a pain, to be honest, because you just get into one side and it's time to turn it over again. Where actually this documentary live set actually lends itself really well to the CD format because of the length of the album. So I had a good time listening to this. It was a fantastic almost revelation to me. I knew more of the songs that I actually thought I would. I mean, I obviously knew the singles and things like that, but the guest appearances add so much to the overall complexion and the dynamic to this the live set, but like the who the band are as well. And it was on listening to it, a thought occurred to me, a little bit like a thunderbolt with this album. Now, bear with me with this, right? So this was released in 1978, right? Well, what else was released in that year? Let's have a look, okay? You've got Blondie, Parallel Lines, you got Talking Heads, you got Van Halen's debut, you've got the Buzzcocks, Generation X all releasing albums, you've got Elvis Costello and the Attractions, This Year's Model, and then you've got Bruce Springsteen, Darkness at the Edge of Town, in amongst a host of other things, right? So what I think is this. This is not just the final chapter of a massively influential group and band, but this is the sound of an entire era closing. This is the end of the hippie era and the blues explosion ending the cover closing on that chapter of music as new sounds and even new technology such as punk, post-punk, electronic influenced music swept them aside. Even Neil Young, after this, in 1983, turned to electronics to make music in his album Trans, right? And he features on this album. But, as I kind of alluded to earlier on, because of the context and because of the sheer songwriting craft of these artists, this is probably one of the best live albums of all time. So, I listened to a lot of heavy, suffocating music and I thoroughly enjoy it. But sometimes you need something completely different to listen to. And this fits the bill really, really well. It's got great song craft, it's got great musicianship, and great, almost poppy songs at time with just really, really infectious hooks. You listen to The Wait once or twice, and you will have that chorus hook stuck in your head for days. And the night they drove Old Dixie down as well. It will be stuck in your head, and you will be singing that in the most inappropriate places, guaranteed. So, it's obviously a live album, and in a live album, you're often looking for a unique take on songs that you know well. And that's what makes a live album, right? The atmosphere, the context of it, the moment of time in a band's career. Something unique that makes those versions stand out from the album versions, or otherwise you'd be as well just listening to the album over and over again, right? So I want to mention one song in particular, and it's the song Helpless, and it's a Neil Young song, right? And it features on Deja Vu, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Deja Vu. But, so Helpless is probably one of the greatest folk rock songs ever written. But this version, with the band as a backing band to Neil Young, and the groove and their chorus layered vocals on it, and Joni Mitchell with backing vocals, adds such a beautiful texture to this song that I've heard this song hundreds of times, maybe. Certainly plenty. And I think this is such a unique version of this song. This is probably the definitive version of that well-known song. And I don't think many people realise that. And I think that's a bit of a shame, really. But overall, this album and this group are just a really interesting mix of both artists of soul, blues, folk and rock. But the songs are so varied in all of those genres, and a mix of all of them as well. Give you an example, right? Ophelia. So it's a little bit different from the original, and it's got this infused jazz style from the brass section. Now, there's different styles of jazz, like there is styles of blues, styles of rock, whatever, right? But this version has a really unique sound of the very specific sound of New Orleans jazz, with the clarinets and trombones playing through it, which adds like a real unique vibrancy to it. It just reminds me of actually walking down Bourbon Street and like hearing that really unique New Orleans jazz style. And the whole album's just got so much groove and soul. And I'd love to hear these songs on a big PA, and I'm talking like a stadium size Rolling Stones style size of PA, because these songs are huge sounding on this. And it's particularly that brass section that lifts the band and this album a lot of the time. And the band themselves, I kind of mentioned before, they are all multi-instrumentalists, and having three different vocalists and the different unique styles of those vocalists had such a unusual dynamic through the band's sound. And then there's the guitar sound as well. You've got the 60s kind of California surf style attack of a guitar that cuts through the kind of the rolling bluesy groove of the band, that delivers such memorable solo lines that you'll be humming and singing those as well. So yeah, I mean, I was pretty blown away by this album, and I spent, you know, some really enjoyable hours kind of going through that. You can get not the official video, but there's alternative YouTube videos of this concert, and the sound quality, you know, for 1978 is actually pretty good. So I had a pretty good time wading through those and finding out just a little bit more about this band. Really triggered my kind of interest for the research process of you know, the podcasts that we've done in the past, because it's actually quite an interesting process in itself. So I guess to kind of finish off with this is, despite the length, you know, over 2 hours, I think this is probably one of the best live albums of all time. And it's a fitting tribute to a band with quite obvious, profound influence on the wider rock scene and movement. And it's definitely an album where the band go out in a blaze of glory and showcases everything that's important about them, and showcases just how great a band they actually were. But it's not just about the band, I guess. It's that final chapter on the Peace and Love generation and the sound and of the 60s and 70s that brought so many unique artists and sounds out and made them aware to us all, creating that the music that we all know and love and appreciate today. And in 1978, they probably weren't just being swept aside, but actually probably buried completely by new sounds. And these classic style of rock bands and albums were probably not reflected on again until probably the 90s, where they were kind of rediscovered again as the music companies remastered and re-edited these albums to release on CD. So at that point, a whole new generation rediscovered all these classic albums that were being kind of drip fed into popular circulation again on CD. So yeah, I think this probably slips into my top 10 live albums of all time, for the quality of music, for the quality of songcraft, for all the interesting guest appearances, for the influence that this band had, for the energy through the whole thing, despite it being over 2 hours long, that you probably need to go to the Who Live at Leeds or something to find, or Rory Gallagher or something, to find the same level of energy through a live album. So I guess that leads me on to future episodes. And because this, I thought, I can't not have this in my top 10 albums of all time. I thought to myself, well, what are my top 10 albums of all time? So I probably will do an episode of that once I get those 10 albums kind of solidified in my mind and kind of processed a little bit. So I've got some ideas for up and coming episodes, which include my top 10 live albums of all time. I'm going to go through my LP collection, my music collection, and as I pull things out of my collection and that I find of interest that I can speak about, I'll podcast on those. So I hope you enjoyed my kind of ramblings about my discovery of this album. I hope you go out and check it out for yourself, because you'll be rewarded by it. There's worse ways to spend a couple of hours by going through YouTube or Spotify or whatever and finding out about this band, because they are, they're sensational in all honesty. So yeah, stay tuned to Facebook and things like that. I'll drip feed information out on things that I will podcast about, and I hope you find it as interesting as I do. And thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Cheers, folks.